Hey everybody, welcome in to Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, we are going to continue looking at the Orioles draft picks and undrafted free agent signings. And today we look at the O's third round pick, a guy who could be potentially their best value steal in this draft if he does continue to hit like he did this season at Ole Miss. And that is the shortstop Anthony Servidio, whom the Orioles took with their third round selection in the draft. Servidio, a 21-year-old shortstop, that's what he played mostly in his natural position, but he also played a lot of second base, some right field, and some center field as well at Ole Miss in his 3 years. In 2018, as a freshman at Ole Miss, he was kind of in and out of the lineup, defensive replacement, pinch runner, pinch hitter, got some starts, hit .226 with a .314 on base, one homer, two doubles in 34 games. He got himself into the starting lineup in 2019 as the everyday second baseman as a sophomore. 66 games for him. He had 10 doubles, 3 home runs. He hit .287 with a .429 on base, but slugged just .388. You don't want the slugging percentage under the on-base percentage, but that's what it was for him in his first 2 years. However, this year as a junior, he got the starting shortstop spot for Ole Miss, and of course, the season lasted just 17 games for the Rebels. But in his junior season in 2020, in those 17 games, 3 doubles, 5 home runs, 24 walks to 16 strikeouts. He stole 9 bases. He hit .390 with a .575 on base and a .695 slugging percentage in those 17 games. He had hit 4 homers in his first 2 years combined. He went deep 5 times in just 17 games in 2020. He was one of the best hitters in the SEC through 9 conference play, and he's always been an elite defender and a good base runner and a smart player as well. But this season of hitting as a junior rocketed him up into this draft and into an Orioles third round pick. Now, I got to watch Anthony Servidio play baseball for an entire summer season back in the summer of 2018 in the Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League, which has teams from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia playing in a wooden bat summer collegiate league. Servidio played for the Baltimore Redbirds. I called their games back in the summer of 2018, and Servidio was one of the best players in the league. He was an all-star and may have been the best player on that Redbirds team. He was phenomenal with the bat. He was the best defender in the entire league, at least from what I saw, playing mostly shortstop for the Redbirds. And it was an electric summer to watch him play. And now he comes back to Baltimore as he will be signing with the Orioles after being taken in the third round of the draft. So I saw him for a whole summer, but wanted to get somebody else who saw him in his Ole Miss days as well. And so on the pod today, we're going to welcome in Nick Suss. He is the Ole Miss Athletics beat writer for the Clarion Ledger. And Nick joins us now to talk about Anthony Servidio, the Ole Miss shortstop. Nick, thank you so much for joining us today.
I am happy to help y'all.
So we bring you on to talk about the Orioles' third-round pick, Anthony Servidio, who is a guy that I got the pleasure of seeing play in the summer of 2018 when he came up to the Cal Ripken League to play for the Baltimore Redbirds. But you've seen him really at his best in an Ole Miss uniform, especially this year. So he comes out after his junior year, and he's a third-round pick. From someone who's watched him play down there in Oxford, what's the scouting report for Orioles fans to know about the video?
So I'll give you the two or three guarantees that I'll have about Servidio are: guarantee number one, he is very disciplined at the plate. He is a modern leadoff hitter in the sense that he's not your slap happy average guy. He is willing to take a walk. He's willing to get hit by the pitch. He's willing to find a way to get on base. And I think that is a skill that you don't often see very much in college baseball when there's a little bit more of an emphasis on small balls. The fact that he is a leadoff hitter was able to kind of extend at bats and find a way to get to first, whichever way he can, was an impressive skill. And the second thing I'll guarantee about him is he's a very intelligent base runner. I think he attempted 38 steals in his college career and succeeded on 34 of them. I think he was 22 for 23 or something like that in 2019. He is really good at taking the extra base. He's really good at stealing bases. He might not be your true 80 speed guy like some of these people you heard about in the draft grade-wise, but he is a guy who knows when to take the next base, and he does it pretty efficiently. And then the third thing, and I think people would be really excited to hear about this, he is a plug-and-play defender in the middle of the infield. He looked really good at shortstop in the 17 games he played there this year. He didn't get to play very much shortstop before this year because Greg Kessinger was there, and he was a second-round pick of the Astros last year. He was the Brooks Wallace Award winner for the nation's best shortstop in 2019. So Servideo had to play a lot of right field and had to play a little bit of center field and a lot of second base to get onto the field, and he played all of those positions pretty proficiently too. So at the worst-case scenario, you're looking at a guy who can play 5-6 different positions for you, can kind of rove around the defense and play everything well. He's a natural shortstop, and I think he's probably a better defensive shortstop than even Greg Kessinger was before him. But if you need him at second base, he'll be able to play there. If you need him in an outfield position, he can probably play there in a pinch. So if you combine his plate discipline, his intelligence on the base paths, and his really impressive range on defense and his arm on defense, that's the kind of player you're getting. There's a big, big question mark about whether his offensive production from 2020 is sustainable, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But the three things I can guarantee are those.
Yeah, stick with the defense first. I saw him play that summer in summer ball a couple years ago. He played shortstop pretty much every day, and was definitely the most impressive defender in that league that year. But I know, as you said, he played a lot of second, and then they moved him into right field some. You touched on it a little bit, but we know his top position is shortstop. But do you think if he's a guy who does advance to the major leagues, it's more of a he can play there in a pinch, or can he be a guy who you can trust to move around the diamond if he turns himself into an everyday starter?
I think if he turns himself into an everyday starter, his best chance to do it is as a shortstop, because that is what he's most natural at. But I think you know this as well as almost any baseball fan. There are more shortstops than any other position. It's just the place that the most athletic player gets put in Little League. So more people are natural shortstops than they are natural second basemen. So I think he has the ability to play second base. I think his arm might be a little bit too strong for second base, and that would be a luxury that teams don't often have, to have such a rangy second baseman. But my impulse, just based off of his offensive skills, is that he is more likely to become an everyday player because of his utility and his defense than he is as an offensive player right now. So based off of that, we've seen how Major League Baseball has trended towards more power up the middle, and you want to hit first second baseman or hit first shortstop just to take advantage of the times. Maybe that makes it so Servideo doesn't have a spot, where maybe 10, 15 years ago, and definitely even before then, you could have had a second baseman who walks a lot hitting your 8 or 9 hole, and that's an awesome thing to have, a defensive second baseman who gets on base at the bottom of the lineup. We'll see how that skill translates of him being more of an old-fashioned baseball player in that regard. We'll see how that translates in the 2020s.
Well, let's talk about the bat then, because obviously that's the big thing about him, and really the number jump from year by year for him is astounding, and it's what gets you excited about him, and a lot of what made him a third round pick this year. You know, he's really a glove first, not everyday player as a freshman. Really wasn't a staple in the starting lineup. Goes to an everyday player as a sophomore, and the bat comes around, but he's maybe not your 2 or 3 hitter. And then all of a sudden this year, 5 homers, hitting almost 400, on base almost 600 in just those 17 games. what flipped for him to hit five homers this year after only four in his previous two seasons combined? And how much of that do you think was why he shot up to the third round this year?
Oh, I think that's the only reason why he shot up to the third round. I think if he, I don't want to cite the stats completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was a 290 hitter as a sophomore and his slugging percentage was south of 400. And if he came back and was having another 290, 350, 350 season, he's coming back for his senior year. But the fact that he was able to jump up to 390, 550, 700 or somewhere thereabouts, and it wasn't against nobody competition either. He hit a double and a single off of Reed Detmers, who was a top 10 pick of the Angels, I believe. He played really well against the other two pitchers from Louisville, who ended up, I think another one of them was picked at the end of the first round, Bobby Miller. And then he played well against Indiana and ECU and Southern Miss. So I mean, these were teams that were pretty good. And he found that power stroke. He hit a walk-off home run. Granted, it was against Alcorn State, but the ability to be able to show that power in a late-inning situation and not just in garbage time was impressive. And it kind of came out of nowhere, because I'm sure some Orioles fans have heard this. He went to the Cape last summer and was like a bottom five hitter in the Cape. He had one of the worst batting averages of anyone there, and his on-base percentage was still pretty good because that's what he's good at, but he really wasn't succeeding against top-flight competition at the Cape. Then he comes out this year, and he's absolutely raking for a top 10 team in the country. So I don't know how sustainable that is. I would have loved to see the season last one weekend longer, when you would have gotten to see Cervidio face LSU and Cole Henry and Jaden Hill and some of these absolute superstar pitchers that LSU has. And maybe then we could have seen, oh, he's settled into this rhythm. But I think that if this power wasn't a fluke, if he can become a 10 home run guy in a college season, which is about what he was on pace for, 8 to 10 home runs, that probably translates to being a 15, 20 home run guy in the majors. And I don't know. I don't know if he's that guy. He had four home runs in his career before this year, and then he hits five in 17 games. I don't know if that's part of his game. But if he can translate college home runs into professional gap power, and if you see him in double A or triple A hitting doubles into the gaps, that's a really good sign that maybe he really has turned a corner when it comes to his extra base stroke.
Okay, back to the interview in a second, but if you're like me, you probably start thinking about what you're going to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. Or honestly, I'm thinking about it right now. It's about 11 a.m. after I've eaten breakfast, already thinking about dinner. And that's why I love Postmates. But right now, they're even better, because you can get your food delivered without leaving the house, even opening the door. Given what's going on in the world, they created non-contact deliveries. So now when I order from local restaurants, everything gets left right outside the door. It just gets left out there, and I can go pick it up myself and no contact whatsoever. They also have Postmates Pickup, which I've been using to order takeout from my favorite restaurants. You guys need to be supporting your neighborhood restaurants right now. It's obviously been tough on them, not being able to open the interior part and the dining rooms, and really only being able to do carry out and delivery. Especially look to support Black-owned businesses as well. And Postmates, they don't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make it easier by picking up everything I need. If you need something from Walgreens, 7-Eleven, anything like that, they'll drop it off at your door as well. You can just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your favorite foods, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. And that's really the hope. You know, even if he can't become a 20-homer guy, if he can be a big-time doubles guy, a 30-double guy who can hit you 10 or 15 homers, and of course he's going to bring the defense, that would be the complete package for Cervidio. But we also know as well, he can be the energy guy as well. The hair went blonde this year, We see the between the legs high fives after the wins. I saw it a couple of summers ago in the Ripken League as well. But you know, sitting there watching him for the season where he's producing his best as well. Was he still that energy guy this year for Ole Miss?
Oh yeah, he was definitely one of them. Him and his double play turning partner Peyton Chatelier had those between the legs high fives after every win. So Ole Miss fans got to see that 16 times in a row this year, which was pretty interesting. And he's an athletic guy, and he's a guy who likes to have fun. He's a guy who can keep that volume up and that energy up. And I mean, he's not afraid to sprint around the bases after a homer. He's not afraid to slide and then pop up at second base and flash the team hand signal back to the dugout. He very much is that energy guy. And the blonde hair thing, I assume this isn't common knowledge in Baltimore, but that is an Ole Miss shortstop tradition. Every Ole Miss shortstop dating back to maybe even Zach Cozart 15 years ago has dyed their hair platinum blonde, because apparently we got nothing better to do down here in Mississippi than make our shortstops go blonde. But yeah, he's a fun player to watch, and I hope that he can make that transition to getting a chance in the big someday, because there aren't too many college shortstops who get up because of what Servideo has. I think when you think of the college shortstops who make the quick transitions to the majors, you think of somebody like Alex Bregman or Dansby Swanson, who was just an absolute world beater from the three hole in college. Austin Martin at Vanderbilt, who went fifth to the Blue Jays, is another example of a guy who you think of as, oh, he's the college infielder who's going to try and hit 30 homers and he's going to play okay to above average defense. But to have somebody like Servideo who can be your top of the lineup on base guy and play good defense and be your energy guy and your base stealer, he's a little bit more of a complete player. And does Major League Baseball have room for a complete player who isn't necessarily excellent at any one thing? I don't know. It's going to be tough to see. But I do think of an organization like Baltimore sees that the fact that he can do a lot of things pretty well can be an advantage, especially when I don't know what they got him close to swap value. You guys would know better than I do. But my expectation would be they kind of got him either at or under slot value, which is always helpful.
Yeah, I don't think the numbers have come out yet, but it's seeming like with the money they've signed their high school guys they got at the end of the draft that everybody else was probably a little under slot. But Nick, last thing for you about Anthony Servideo before we let you go. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, just facing a guy like Reed Detmers, who also went in the top 10, you know, going through 2 years of SEC play and this year some solid competition in the non-conference. He's seen a lot of guys who are going on to the pros. From you watching him or from the coaching staff at all, is there any moment where he was maybe facing a top arm or a top team where, you know, he had a moment where it felt like, you know, hey, this guy looks like a big leaguer?
Yeah, he went 3-for-4 with a homer and two RBI, or sorry, a double, a homer, and a couple RBIs. That's obviously impressive to be able to string that together off of Ace Lacy. And then I think it was the next or the previous weekend, a couple of weekends previous, he went 3-for-3 with 4 runs against Florida's Saturday guy last year. I'm trying to remember, it might have been Leftwich, it might have been Mace, I can't remember who pitched on Saturdays for Florida last year, but he looked really good in that A&M series and that Florida series, and those are two teams that have really, really good pitching staffs. John Dosakis was on A&M staff last year. He was a first-round pick or second-round pick last year, too. Looking good against those teams is impressive, but especially to notch 3 hits in a game that Ace Lacy starts, that's impressive.
So again, our thanks to Nick Suss, the Ole Miss Athletics beat writer for the Clarion Ledger, for joining us to talk about Anthony Servideo, the Orioles' third-round pick, the shortstop. And again, we talked about the defense. You know, he's great at short, and I've seen him be fantastic at shortstop, but he's a good second baseman. He's a good outfielder, too. He can play all around the diamond. And the hope is that bat that showed up in his junior season, that got better every year, that continues to get better. And if he can hit like that, he's going to be a guy who's playing in the majors because he's got the defense and the base running and those tools down pat already. And if the bat comes around, he's going to be a really good player for the Orioles in the years to come. But coming up later this week, we got one more episode this week as we will continue to look at the Orioles draft picks. On Monday, remember, we had Andrew Allegretta, the voice of Tulane, on the podcast to talk about the Orioles' second-round pick, Hudson Haskin. We had Phil Elson on the pod last Friday to talk about the Orioles' first-round pick, Heston Kerstad. And today we looked at Anthony Servideo. On Friday, we're going to take a look at the Orioles' competitive balance round A selection, the 30th overall pick, Jordan Westberg, the shortstop out of Mississippi State. And we are going to have Ben Portnoy on the podcast. He covers Mississippi State baseball along with Mississippi State athletics in general for the Dispatch down in Mississippi. And he will join us to tell us about Jordan Westberg and what the Orioles got with selection number 30 overall. So that'll be later in the week. And then we'll continue into next week talking about the Orioles' two high school selections, Kobe Mayo and Carter Baumler, and then those four undrafted free agents that the Orioles have signed so far. Also, one more thing to remember. Obviously, we've been talking about other baseball. The KBO has been going on, but the MPB in Japan starts on Friday morning, 5 a.m. Eastern Time, opening day this Friday, June 19th. Of course, Adam Jones is with the Oryx Buffaloes. Gabriel Yanoa is also in that league. If you remember Joe Gunkel, he was a pitcher in the Orioles system for a few years. He's in the league as well. A lot more former major leaguers in the MPB than there is in the KBO, and it should be interesting to follow along with that as well. Unfortunately, they're in the same time zone as Korea, so the games are pretty much at the same time. They're early in the morning during the week, and then, you know, around midnight or 1 a.m. on the weekends. But we'll still give you updates on Twitter at Locked On Orioles and here on the podcast a bit as well. But we will mostly continue our Orioles draft coverage over the next few weeks. And we'll be back on Friday to talk about Jordan Westberg. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Maybe next up, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On Fantasy Baseball.